bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yes, we're back. Happy New Year. I'm joined by Alex. Kevin was supposed to be here, I think, but he's not. So we're going to soldier on regardless anyway, Magdalene halfway through. And we've also got a bit of work going on at the house at the moment. We're in a vent fitted and there may be some drilling, but we'll ride the storm, eh? We'll be fine. Joining me to discuss the week's photo news and all the stuff from CES and the demise of Jessops is Mr. Alex G. Fox. How you doing, pal?
I'm okay.
I think we're in for a bit of a set to today, mate, you and me.
I think, yeah, if we didn't have many stories, I think we could probably keep it going for a while.
Just Jessops. So, the first story, the big one, the smacko. Please join in when you feel like it, chat room. Jessops has gone into administration, absolutely, for certain, for definite. They are no more. They are a non-photo sale retail shop, and PricewaterhouseCoopers has been put in charge of dealing with the sell-off, so everything will be 50 pence cheaper next week. They've already done this before. They've had a share valuation that caused them to give away some of their shares to their backers, HSBC, in 2009, but the company's reported £5.2 million worth of losses in 2012 alone, so there you go. Trevor Moore, who quit HMV, has failed to do the job of saving them. Thought, Mr. Fox?
Well, first of all, right, let's just get the sort of semantics out of the way. We're both agreed that there's 2,000 people there that are going to lose their job, and that is a shame, whatever the circumstance.
Some of them deserved it.
Yeah, but maybe the management, but not the poor people that, you know, I'm going to be able to pay their mortgages next month. Well, maybe we don't agree.
No. I'm just thinking there's a couple that don't deserve it, mainly the ones that didn't serve me the other night in Oxford Street. So,
but yeah, I think, though, I mean, I've used Jessops on and off for years and years and years. I mean, when I first used Jessops, it was, if you like, you know, in quotes, a proper photography company.
It was, absolutely right.
You know, I mean, you had what was it, Dixon's, was it, who are now PC World Curries and all that business. You sort of went there if you really, really didn't care about photography. But the one stage up was going to Jessops, where you might find somebody that knew where the front and the back of the camera was. You know, it was different. But yeah, I mean, I agree that things have gone downhill. Not so much rapidly, but they've gone downhill, definitely. But I don't necessarily blame the staff. I think the whole... It's like working in an incredibly depressing environment. It's like, you know, okay, maybe the band carried on playing on the Titanic, but everyone else was trying to get on the lifeboats. So you might have found a couple of people there that were still willing to try and make that extra effort, but most of them saw the writing on the wall, and, you know, they got to the point where they thought, you know, well, what is the point of this? And, you know, maybe that's what you've suffered in the last few months. But I do find it really, really sad that...
That's not my stomach. That's the drilling upstairs. It's a fact of life. I can't change it.
No, that's fine. But, I mean, I do find it sad. What it says to me, and this is where we and you have sort of differed arguing, I believe that not just Jessops, but I think the retail of photography in general is destroyed. Again, is the wrong word, I suppose. The options are going. People will... buy it probably from the cheapest place, and, you know, because running a business on the internet is unbelievably cheap compared to trying to run a business anywhere else, most people will be buying their equipment off of the internet, and that's great. But what are they going to do? They all going to have to listen to the Photo Show to actually find out, ask questions and other things. You know, the whole thing that bothers me is we've gone over to mobile phone cameras. You know, people say that's good enough, and that's fine. It might be good enough for some people. But without the actual shops, without the high street, people walking in, seeing a nice camera, thinking, oh, I might go and have a chat with them. I'm thinking I might get into photography. I'll go in there, have a chat, and do things like that. All that you're going to have left is less and less cameras, even on the internet, and nowhere for people to get enthusiastic about photography. And that's my worry. It's just another step towards, you know, us becoming, if you like, us as photographers becoming obsolete. As in what we've learned and the enthusiasm we've got becoming obsolete. We, you know, we might be able to pass on a bit of knowledge if people ask us questions, but I believe there's going to be less and less people interested in asking questions because photography is going to be the thing you do on your mobile phone. It's not going to be the thing you do for love.
No, I don't believe that. I think I think that you can't look at the whole demise of Jessop's in a simplistic view of just saying it's all to do with camera phones and internet selling, because I don't think it is. I think it's to do with the fact that expectations of customer service have risen. Anders in the chat room is saying our expectations of customer service has been defined by Apple, so when we go elsewhere and we get rubbish service, we go elsewhere, full stop. And that's true. I got crap service twice now this year in Jessop's, and I walked away without buying. I had £2,000 in my pocket to spend that night, and in 15 minutes, the only person in the shop who wanted to sell me a Canon camera was the guy getting paid by Nikon. He's the only person that tried. So I've got no sympathy with this aspect of the fact that there was good customer service there. I don't believe there ever was in the last 5 years. I agree with you entirely about the fact that there is a loss of competence within the staff because people weren't getting paid what they should have got paid. They looked for cheaper staff rather than looking for competent staff, and that turned them down as well. But when it comes down to it, I think one of the biggest issues is the fact that compact cameras and other cameras that you would purchase, there aren't any crap cameras out there anymore. There's better cameras than others, but you go back 5 years and you could walk into a camera shop, you were taking your life in your hands because they could peddle you something that was 2 megapixels and it looked like you'd printed it out with a potato at the end of it. It was awful. That's not the case anymore. You walk into a camera shop and you pick up any of the cameras there that are 10 megapixels or slightly better, and they will take a perfectly good, perfectly happy picture that will reproduce on photo paper and make you go, wow, that's a great picture. They just don't exist anymore. So people don't need to go to a camera shop to buy them because they can get them online. And also, they're protected by distance selling regulations. So if they do get a camera that's, holy hell, this is crap, they've got 10 days to send it back if they don't like it. You don't get that in a store. And also, Jessop's overexpanded too much. They went far too big, far too quickly, and they paid the price as a result. And it was the whole thing together, I think. I don't think it was just, you know, you can't blame the internet. I just don't see that.
Oh, okay. To an extent, I'll give you a lot of that. The bits I heard, anyway. I'd say that, yeah, I mean, okay, I'm not wholeheartedly blaming the internet, but I do honestly feel that, as in anything that's got an art form, if you like, anything that's not, you know, you can go to a shop and you can buy a TV, or you can go to a shop and look at a TV, and then you've got, you know where it's 1080p, and you know the make, and you can see the contrast. You know, you don't really need expertise to be able to do anything other than watch a television or buy a washing machine and things like that. But, you know, because they're not asking you to be creative with them. What I think is being killed, it's been diminished. The sort of creativity that comes with having a physical place. The only place you're going to have soon is you're going to have maybe photographic clubs. Because it used to be, I mean, in years gone by, I mean, I still work in Soho. It's, you know, it's the capital in the UK of photography, and it has been for years. And I could wander into a photography store, wander around, just see what was going on, and start chatting with someone. I could give away a whole afternoon chatting to people that were excited and enthusiastic. And, you know, it's a bit like going to an Apple store. Half the time I'm in an Apple store, I'm playing with something. Someone will come up to me and say, well, do you know anything about that? And you get into a lovely conversation because people have shared interests. You can't share an interest necessarily on an Amazon site. You know, so that's my point. That part of the community that, you know, photography is, always was a community-based thing. People still want to do photo.
But you didn't get community because of Jessop's.
No, but Jessop's was a part of the community. If I went in, I mean, years ago, I was having trouble getting a scanner, which was a specialized Epson scanner. And even the big stores were having trouble getting it. I went into, you know, a local Jessop's, and I was just wandering around and said, "Have you got any chance of doing that?" And he sort of went, "Oh, look, you know, it's made in a factory in such and such, such and such." And it took them about 2 weeks, but they're the only people that could get it for me because they had the sway at the time. They were the biggest store. You know, you couldn't get it from a Dixon's or somewhere because they just didn't have the buying power or the details about the, you know, they needed to know where this particular machine was made so they could import one for me. And they'd managed to do that. But while I was there, I was talking to kids that had just finished their degree. Everyone that used to work in Jessup's behind the counter all had degrees in photography, and it was their first step. I can't get a job as a photographer yet. I can't get into a laboratory yet or anything, but I work in Jessup's. I want to be surrounded by it. I want to be part of the scene, if you like. And that's how it used to be. It really was like that. And nowadays, I think we discussed this recently. If you want to become a photographer, where do you start? I've no idea. I couldn't even give you any advice.
Yeah, but that's like dating. It's been so long since you dated Alex, you haven't got a clue where to start. I'll tell you what, I've got to say, eHarmony's adverts on the TV at the moment, I want to join even though I'm married. Just good adverts.
Okay. And I bet their customer service satisfaction ratings are really high.
Don't tell the wife I said that, for Christ's sake. Jim in the chat is making some great points here, and we're just ignoring them. What about Calumet? What about Merchant City cameras? What about Wex? What about Clifton cameras? What about F Forbes? What about Park cameras? See, all of those are independents, and they're doing perfectly well. Wex, yeah, I've got to say, Wex have got customer service down pat for me, mate. I'm listed as a pro on their stuff, and every time I need some, "Hi, this is Ewan. I'm stuck out in the middle of a field. Can you send me? I need it tomorrow." Yes, no problem.
Okay, you've got all those camera shops. Right, you add up how many branches they've got between them. You'll be amazed how few they've got. And it's okay for me. I live in London. It's okay for you. You live in Birmingham. You know,
I've only got Calumet.
Well, there you go. You've got one shop in the whole of the second major city in Britain.
But what do I want? And what do I want a camera shop for? That's my point. The market has changed.
No, but you're a professional, so you don't necessarily need advice.
But no, but that's the point, is you never got any advice in Jessup's. That's my point. The market has changed. The advice is coming from online reviews. The advice is coming from online reviews at sellers rather than just like photo magazines. And people, there isn't a worry about buying a piece of crap anymore. That's my point. The market has changed, Alex.
Yeah, okay. There's no worry about buying. You're right, completely. You could go and buy between £50 and £500, and
it'll do.
It will do. Yeah, that's your starting point. But like, my point is, this community of photography, it doesn't exist. Well, it won't exist at all very soon. It's funny, if I'm in the street holding my proper cameras, and you probably find the same as well, you'll have people walking up to you and sort of asking you, "Oh, you got a proper camera? Do you know anything about that?" And then they'll sort of, "Well, I've got this. I don't know what happened to me. Do you know anything about that? Do you know how I could do this?" And it's because there's nowhere for them. In the old days, you would wander into a camera store, wander around, look at things, and start a chat with someone in the store. It used to happen to me all the time. Now I get stopped in the street if I'm holding a proper, what I call inverted commas, proper camera, and people assume wrongly, obviously, that I know something, and they'll ask me. So there's obviously a need for people to have, you know, advice. You know, not everybody just wants to buy something off of a website and buy a book or get a magazine and try and find it for themselves. People enjoy the communication amongst people, learning between them. It's why we do photo walks. It's why we do this show.
But having said that, we're a show and we have listeners and we engage with our listeners and we answer their questions. They could get advice by coming to us. If you type into Google photo forums or photo advice, you get thousands of pages of forums. I've just got one straight off here, photography forum, One World, One Passion, One Forum. There are no end of questions and advice and tips and tricks that are running. You type in photography questions into Google, you get the same thing. You get beginners, you get intermediates. There's tons of stuff online for getting people started in photography. Yeah.
But you're right, online, which is, you know, online, it's not.
And I agree entirely with you about there's nowhere in the high street to go for advice on cameras very easily. But when Jessup's were trading, there was still nowhere to go on the high street for advice on cameras.
Well, yeah, we both agree they lost their way. I'm slightly more pleasant about how they lost their way.
Rangefinder forum, says Jim. Not everyone is comfortable using the interweb. Ah, well. Let's move on.
I was going to say that, but I thought he'd just shout at me.
No, I'd never shout at you, Alex. What are you talking about? You were setting yourself up for an argument today. I'm not going to give you one. Canon have released a whole pile of other stuff before CES or at CES. There's the Ixus 140. Pretty samey. 8x optical zoom. Yeah, can't say a lot else about that, really. It's decent. It'll take a good picture, like we just said. Here's one, though, from Canon. This is their N, and it's 8x optical zoom as well as, and it's a little square thing, and it's got two little buttons for camera strap that go on the front, and it's small, and it's tiny, and I put in the dock. You can look at that, and I bet you this is a Marmite camera. You're going to love it, or you're going to hate it, but you can't say that there's no innovation gone on there. It's going to land in UK shops in April, and it's going to be £269, 28 millimetres with a Digic 5 processor, 12 megapixels. Any thoughts, Alex?
You're right, it is a Marmite camera, but I can see if they market this, well, basically if they market it, because Canon don't really market. You know, that you might get a picture in the back of a photo magazine, but I mean, Kodak used to get TV commercials with people with smiley faces running around with Kodak cameras. This is different enough that if they market it as slightly funky and slightly trendy, as long as the actual camera takes some good pictures, I think this might have a future, because this is the first difference we've seen in a modern camera for ages. What's going on now is if they either stay exactly the same or they go retro. Like, Fuji's gone retro and have done a hell of a good job at doing it.
They have, yeah. We'll talk about one of those in a minute.
But this, I like the idea. I can see this on a neck strap, but as a, almost as a fashion item in its own right. If you imagine this in a little, I mean, okay, mainly for ladies here, but imagine it in a long, small purse or something that's actually hanging off your neck. So it's a bit like you're akin with your lovely iPhone case or this case or that case. I can see this if it came with some sort of case, some sort of you know, fashion accessory. It's the right size and it's the right shape to sort of make a statement as well as being a half-decent camera. So that actually quite interests me. And also, you know, it doesn't look much bigger than a lady's compact in a handbag.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they market it as in a fashion item, I think they might do quite well with that.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's very, very good. You were saying there about Fuji. Fuji have released a pile of cameras that go retro, definitely, as you were saying. Pentax have kind of copied them this week as well with their MX1. They're saying that they're going to release the fastest focusing compact camera that's out there. And I quite like this, because the one thing that we accuse a lot of manufacturers of doing is not responding to public demand and trying to just sell us the numbers. But one of the things that cripples compacts being used, and certainly the prosumer-y end of the market, they get crippled by the fact that when you want to take them out and use them at a little sporting event or something like that, or the kids at the kids' school fete, or where there's something quick going on, you want to turn around and gather the action quickly, they're a pain in the backside. I mean, they're just non-existent in terms of point and shoot in the truest sense of any speed. So they're going to address it with this, they reckon.
Yeah, I mean, I know some people don't like this styling. It might be my age, it might be my history, but I think they are gorgeous. Honestly, I mean, I've met women that I've felt less about than that camera.
They do look very retro. I mean, I remember my dad's old Kodak looks very similar to that.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was a fake, I wish they could have a little flick on the back so the whole back opened and you put your card in, you know, akin to with the the film. I'd love it. It'd be so stylish.
Anyway. The whole back opens and there's somewhere to put your sandwiches.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. No, but I think one of the things compacts could learn from is some of them have got the sort of video functionality. So you basically hold them and they auto focus constantly. So, you know, these cameras, I mean, there's a few that do it now that are basically, they've got a memory. So once you've pressed the button, it actually stores a few seconds worth of images before you actually pressed it and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's the thing with compact cameras. They need to be constantly sort of half pressed and constantly scanning the autofocus to work in any way at all. if you, you know, want to do something quickly. But most people don't. They pull it out of their bag and they say, well, that's really interesting. I want that hawk that's just flown over my head. And yeah, I've got a chance. You're lucky if it's in the picture, let alone if it's in focus. So it is the one thing that I think that's probably come from the advent of mirrorless technology. They've managed to speed up the autofocus quite substantially. So yeah, that would be a good thing. The only thing with these, I mean, this new F20, I think it is sort of a slightly cheaper than the F1, and it's sort of between the F10 and the F100. I can't remember, but they do need to start bringing the prices down a bit at this end, because they've got something really quite wonderful. But
yeah, I've been saying for a long time that price end is overpriced by quite some distance.
Yeah, but I mean, they've got the market. In a funny way, even if they hadn't sold any, the fact that they had these out and they were expensive, it's got people looking. And when they do bring out a version that is cheaper, people start looking at them because they've already had the market for a while. I mean, I just think they're beautiful. I'm just really sick and tired of sort of point and shoot cameras that just look like, you know, look like a phone or look like anything else. It's lovely to see a camera manufacturer make a camera that looks like a camera.
Well, you're going to love the one from Pentax, because Pentax have brought out the MX1. And do you remember the cameras that used to have the bulb on the end of it and used to fill them with water and squeeze the bulb and they used to squirt people? Because that's what this camera looks like. 24 millimeters on the lens, and it looks retro, but it does look like a water gun to me, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's okay. It doesn't look as nice as the Fuji, but let's face it, I suppose how it works is possibly more important than how it looks.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find some specs here. F1.8 to F2.5, 28mm wide-angle lens coverage, 12-megapixel CMOS sensor, 3-inch screen on the back, it says, and an ISO up to 1280, which I think is 12,800, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be the next move in photography. I think CMOS sensors and all the sensors, I think something... There needs to be, in a funny way, there needs to be a new technology come through, because these sensors are sort of getting to, they're at the point now that the dots can't get any smaller, low light can't get any better. They're tricks after tricks after tricks to try and compensate for how many pixels they've got on these things. Mm. And half the camera is just trying to accommodate, you know, the mess that too many pixels is causing. So I think that's the next thing with these cameras. There will be I'm sure someone's already done it, but why bring out a new technology until, you know, it's desperate? But I think that's where these things are going. I don't know. I don't know if we've got to the point now where manufacturers are sort of, I'm not sure they're on their last legs, but I think some of them are going to have to start rationalizing some of the amounts of different cameras they've got. Because it seems like every couple of months there's just a glut of incredibly similar cameras. I think I think there's going to have to be quality over quantity soon.
Right,
we've seen them all before now.
I think they are overpriced.
Yeah,
definitely. Photoshop allegedly was going free this week. Someone found a page that CS2 had some downloads with some general serial numbers which could be used on all platforms. And it looked like you were going to be able to get CS2 for free. Problem was, you needed Rosetta. And the other problem was, it wasn't true. So it got taken down. The page got taken down, unfortunately. But I thought it was an interesting conversation. Should Adobe make CS2 free of charge?
Well, the problem with, I mean, they can do stuff like that, but I suppose if they do that, no one's ever going to buy, what do they call it, Elements?
Well, CS2's, I mean, the current Elements has got content-aware delete, so it's a long way past CS2.
Yeah, but also, do you not, I can't remember now, but the upgrade, I suppose they could always say if you've got a free copy of CS2, it doesn't go towards an upgrade cost. I don't know, it's probably a good idea to do... You know, they do the student pricing and things like that. It's probably a good idea to have sort of an older set, which they can call CS2 student, if you like, and make it to a point where all you're doing is, not maybe not free, but make it so cheap, but tie you into something, tie you into a year's subscription to something. You know, it's probably worth them getting people locked into the idea of using Adobe software. Maybe not giving it away free, but, you know, have a student, have a use, or, you know, in the way Microsoft do with Office. You know, because you can get it for virtually nothing under certain circumstances, but then you've learned Office, and it's really, really tricky to then go over to another.
It's the drug sale, isn't it? It would get you in, and it would get you something to do. So, yeah,
tie them in some way. Don't make it free, because the moment you make it free, in a funny way, it loses its value because it's free. You know, make it £100.
Aperture 10 is also rumoured, mostly because something on Amazon has come out that shows a book that was under NDA, a workflow guide for digital photographers for Apple Aperture 10. And there you go. It's got X on it. I don't know whether X is code or whether X actually means 10, because, of course, they're only up to version 3 at the moment, so they're into version 4 for the next one.
They did that with... is it Final Cut? Because that wasn't coming. It wasn't version 10, but they made it X.
10 anyway, yeah. I mean, what's Aperture got to do to make you want to go for it?
Not be Aperture.
That's the end of that conversation then.
No, I'm sorry. I hate the thing. I've got the most modern Aperture, and I think I bought it because it was it 50 quid or something? I don't know why they decided to make it really cheap. That was a waste of 50 quid. I turned it on, and then I thought, oh, well, I can use that to link to, is it a photo stream?
Yeah.
And then it took so much longer to get Aperture up and running than iPhoto. Then I turned off the Aperture one and did it on iPhoto. All I wanted to do is import them into the computer. It's the VHS Betamax, it's the Apple or Microsoft, and it's the Adobe or Aperture. And I know Adobe, and I use Aperture, and I'm forever trying to work out what it is it's trying to get me to do. I'm sure it does work, but if it's like, you know, you've learned one, I don't want to forget everything I've learned. Because it's not, maybe Adobe's not in whatever the word, intuitive, but it's what I learned, so that's the way I do it. And I try and use Aperture, and I haven't got a clue.
The intuition of Adobe is, did we get their money?
Yeah, but I mean, okay. If I was new to it and I used Aperture, then I'm sure it would be fine. But it hasn't got a tenth of the functionality of Photoshop.
Now, the other week, I set myself a little goal with you guys on Twitter that I was going to take £200 and spend it on some lenses on eBay and see what I could get for me £200. Well, here's what I won. I didn't get anything. I didn't win a single auction. And I put some really stupid prices in as well. But here's the good news. There's quite a lot out there that you can get for under £200. If you want a 50mm f1.8 used, but in perfectly good condition, this one went on eBay for £38. Now, that's
not bad, is it?
That's 60 quid below the asking price of the new one. Standard price of the 35mm f2.0 is £210 from Wex if you want to buy it. One of these went for 75 quid, so you'll take that. And I bought one of these a few months back. It is a cracking lens. It is absolutely beautiful to use, and it gives you that little bit wider angle than the 50 does, obviously. But it's excellent. It's a very fast, very sharp lens. Very good. The 24-70mm. Now, you're not going to get one of those for under £200. That's a £2,000 lens. But how much did that go for, do you think, Alex?
It's a 1.0. It's a 1.4, is it?
No, it's 2.8, I thought.
Really? Yeah. I'll read it. I'm trying to think. So it's a,
no.
Well, 400 quid.
No, it's £2,000 to buy normally. The cheapest one I saw, yeah, was 650 it went for. So that's a really good win.
That's not bad.
I didn't win it, though. And That one, the 24-105, I've just got that with my lens kit with the D6, 6D. That's an £800 lens, and one of those went for £320, which is a very good price, and that is a cracking lens, as long as you don't mind of it just at f4. But there's loads and loads of lenses out there. There was a lot of lenses and a lot of old ones, particularly the 35-105 push-pull lens that I've got. There was one of those went for £25.
Oh, I love those.
They were great. Here it is.
That gives you a rage away, doesn't it?
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, I mean, I must prefer push-pull.
That's it. Triple lens. 35-105. Very good. Very pleasant. Keep looking. There's tons of stuff on eBay. You've just got to get it absolutely right. Jim says, where's the 6D review? I've been playing with my 6D now. I've taken a lot of images with it. The low light's not bad at all. It gets very grainy after 6400, though, very, very quickly. I don't think it's anywhere near as good as the Nikon at the very low light stuff. But it shoots a perfectly passable image at 3200 ISO. It's got a horrible noise when the shutter goes off. I hate it. But the video is significantly better. I put 6DD and 600D footage next to each other on video, and I couldn't tell the difference between the two. And speaking to David Dugdale just after he was on here, he said he couldn't tell the difference. But the video is a lot better saturation, a lot sharper on the 6D. Looks very, very nice. So for video, absolutely winner, winner.
Yeah, that's normally where you notice any difference. It's the actual colour, which is... You know, for the slightly more expensive camera, that's sort of where you get the difference. I mean, it might be slightly sharper, but not enough. You've got to remember, compared to what the actual sensors are doing, 1080 is nothing.
It's two megapixels. Yeah.
It's a pinprick in the middle of the sensor. So, but the important thing is what they allow that pinprick of the sensor to use. They do use other parts of the sensor for other bits to do with the video, don't they, for sort of focusing and or other stuff. So you do get what you pay for, but, you know, don't be put off buying a cheaper camera if you want to do video, because the video is still,
The 600D video is perfectly good. You'll need to get it checked for saturation in Final Cut or something like that, and it will give it a lot more saturation. But in terms of basic quality video, more than enough. I've sold those all year, so.
But, you know, remembering also with the lower-end video camera stuff, you know, the more the light, the better. But it's the same with, you know, any part of the sensor, the more the light, the better. So it's not.
Yeah, I did. There's a couple of things. I did get a very weird scrolling on the lights. If you shoot at 100th of a second, that disappears, and at 30th of a second, it disappears. But anything in between, and you get a lot of flicker and roll on the lights, looking like it's, a frequency issue with 50 kilohertz. But
it probably is, though.
Well, it probably is, but you wouldn't have thought it was going to be all the way through from 30th of a second up to 100th of a second. You'd have thought 50th would have gone.
Well, no, it depends. But it doesn't. They probably have some sort of balance in the system that, you know, at certain, you know, because remember, it's not like you need it with blah, 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 stills photography. You don't really need those minutiae between. No. You basically need maybe 5 or 6 settings, and that's all you need for video.
Yeah, I'm going to take it out and do some tests in the garden and video those and push them.
Well,
out
if you're doing daylight, you'll be able to tell. You know, bright daylight, you'll be able to tell better.
And the other thing is the RAW file. The Pigeon RAW file doesn't open in CS5, and the update to Adobe RAW doesn't take into account the fact that it's changed either. So you cannot now have a Photoshop CS5 and use a 6D. It will not work. You have to use the DNG converter and then play with the DNG files, or you'll have to buy CS6. Adobe, you complete and utter bastards, and Canon, just as bad.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen you raging against the world on that one. To be honest, I don't necessarily blame you this one. But
one version out.
I can't... Have Canon and Adobe fallen out about something?
No,
because it seems, I've never heard of this before. I mean, if Nikon bring out something, quite often the RAW format has already been processed by Adobe before the camera's released.
Maybe.
I mean, that D800, I reckon it was within about 2 days of release that it was already on the Camera RAW update. So I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, Adobe Camera RAW 7 takes in the 6D file and it's done it instantly. What they haven't done is allowed Adobe Camera Raw 7 to be used with CS5. It'll only work with CS6. This is all Adobe. It's not to do with the Canon RAW file, I don't think. It's Adobe being a bunch of toss pots.
Camera Raw 6 won't open it.
Camera Raw 6 won't open it, and Camera Raw 7 will open it, but they won't let Camera Raw 7 work with CS5.
Oh, I really don't understand what's going on there.
And the other thing with the 6D, no off-brand batteries because they're all chipped. So you cannot charge an off-brand battery in the charger. And when you put the off-brand battery into the Canon, it doesn't show you a battery value. It just says, I can't communicate with the battery. It will power it, but it doesn't show you a slider on how it's diminishing or the percentage of the battery left over. So Canon have done some chipping or something like that to stop it going through. And I've got to say, I think that's probably anti-competitive. If the EU get whiff of that, then there could be some trouble. I would hope there should be some trouble because I think that's disgraceful.
It depends what, I mean, depends what their excuse is.
They're going to say health and safety, but it's bull.
Well, it might not even be that. They might say, well, our technology means our cameras are so advanced they need to actually speak to the batteries in some way.
Yeah, no, but, I mean, it's HP are doing the same. HP are putting chips in their print cartridges so that people can't copy them.
I tell you what, I had two very expensive HP printers, which I took great pleasure in smashing the hell out of. Because it got so expensive to only be able to buy HP branded cartridges. Mm. So I went over to Epson, no problem at all. HP also, remembering their cartridges, are dated. I had boxes of cartridges that I hadn't opened. I put them in and the machine wouldn't use them because they were out of date.
That's a disgrace.
So HP got stuffed. I really did enjoy it.
Companies wonder why they're going out of business.
Yeah, well, HP
are in trouble. People aren't stupid. Stick it. I'll go to someone who does care. Some questions. We've got some questions. We've got two from the same bloke. David Bracey sent us two this week. So, David, thank you very much. They're fairly simple ones, I would hope.
So do I. I haven't seen them.
Question one. He only sent them in this morning. Question one. I've got a Nissin flash for a couple of years, which I rarely use, and I'm still confused by the settings that are on it and the camera. The flash has through the lens metering as well as a few manual power options. I was of the understanding that TTL through the lens was a mode where the flash would adjust for the settings of the camera. However, using it on aperture priority, I get very mixed results and usually have to adjust the aperture to suit the flash rather than the other way around. Is this right? I like to take some casual photos of the family on special occasions like Christmas, but do not wish to blind them by taking multiple shots of the same scene. I fiddle with the settings. I know I could just set the camera to an automatic mode like P. However, I just wanted to find out what you guys would do with this setup. For example, I know you have all shot weddings before. Go on then, mate. Start us off.
Well, the thing is with TTL, TTL through the lens metering.
It's all right, carry on.
That's a comment on my answer.
That's Roy the Driller.
Well done, Roy. There's TTL1, there's TTL2, it goes on and on and on. TTL is just like saying...
Sorry, that's the point. That was the other point I wanted to make. My Speedlight 5500, which I'm well aware is probably 10 years old and more, my 5500EX does not compatible with the 6D either. And it's just a flash. It's just a flash. You bastards, yep. Canon. There we go.
Right, moving on. I'll explain it to you. TTL, right? No, what it is, TTL through the lens metering, it's just progressed over time. I've got Nikon Speedlights, that some of them work on older cameras, but they will work, but you have to more or less put them onto almost manual mode to get them to work, to be able to use certain functions. So what it basically is it might do TTL, but it's going to only do the very basic. If you want the fully, all singing, all dancing, you need to buy an all singing, all dancing camera flash. I mean, if you buy the newest ones on a newish camera, set it to auto. It's like pressing P. It's like the equivalent of doing that. You set the TTL to auto. You don't even need to do that. You just set the flash to auto, and you zoom with a camera. As you zoom with a camera, the flash zooms. So what you've got is you've got through the lens, but through the lens is just... it's the starting point. It doesn't mean it's going to do anything. It just means it's got the ability.
It's just sampling and level and feeding light back to the camera to adjust for the exposure that it perceives that you've got through it. Yeah, but
it doesn't even mean that the flash is going to do anything with that information. It just means it's got the ability to do something. But obviously, I mean, what have you got a Nissin? Nissin, they're perfectly good, but the lower-end Nissins are like the lower-end Nikons and Canons. They only do a lot less because you know, you're not paying as much for them.
Again, going back to my old matter of learning your camera, learn your flash as well, and go out and sit and see what the exposures are like. I mean, I've got a ring flash that goes around my 50mm lens and sits off the top of the body of the of my camera, and it underexposes, it underfires. So every time you can set it on the P setting, it doesn't matter. It's not going to take a decent shot. But if you start shooting in manual, you can get it to do an awful lot because you just boost your ISO a little bit and then cut back to a 60th of a second and it does just fine. You can't do aperture priority with any TTL flash gun. It doesn't work. It won't get it right every time because it doesn't set it properly. If you want to change your depth of field effect, then just shoot in manual. All you've got to do is burn two or three shots setting it up before you go in. And then actually it's even easier because regardless of what the light's like, because you've got the flash, you just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot and then correct afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, I did some artist handing over a painting to charity recently, and I was told about 30 seconds before it was happening that was what I was there doing. So I just quickly chucked a flash on top of whatever camera I had with me and started to go. And all I did was I made sure the aperture is what I wanted, and I made the ISO as good as I could possibly get away with. And the first couple of shots, I did a couple of test shots, were overexposed, so I just flipped around the diffuser. And the fact that the diffuser was flipped round onto the flash lessened the light by enough a percentage that I got away with it. So, you know, there's loads of tips and tricks. Make sure the camera settings are doing what you want it to do, and then balance the flash to it. Quite often with a flash, you'll just have a little switch on the side that will say, you know, an eighth, a quarter, three quarters, a half, one to one or whatever. You might just find that just take a shot. If it's too bright, switch it down one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not...
Or close your aperture, or reduce your ISO. There's lots you can do.
But I would basically get the camera settings to what you want them to be, because normally, unless it's an incredibly cheap flash, it's all very easily done to sort of turn the light down a little bit, very easy. Just get your settings right on your camera, and people think flash is rocket science. It's really not. The only thing you got to remember about flash is learn a little bit about bouncing it, and then that will save you a lot of problems. But the actual, the amount of light you get, if you're going to point it on the quick shoot and, just turn it down a little bit, you'll get the shot you want. It's not rocket science. I know people like to make out it is, but it really isn't.
I just wanted to show something that I got in November. And I bought it for an event, and I only used it the once, and then I put it away. And then Christmas Day, I dragged it out because I knew I'd have to shoot in manual with the flash because it wouldn't work. And it's just basically a simple one of these pop-up. It's a Lastalite Easy Box, and all that does is your camera, your flash goes through there, and you've got a little soft box, and then you've got a little cover for it here, and that just diffuses the flash plenty. To the point where you can shoot whatever you like, and it's 40 quid.
Yeah, well, I would say that whenever I use flash for work, if I'm getting into a tricky situation, the softbox comes out. Because that is the photographer's main secret, softboxes. It will get you out of nearly every situation that you can't. You haven't got time to sit there and work out where the reflections are going and where the bouncing is going. Turn the flash up a lot more, stick the softbox on it, and away you go, and everyone thinks you're a genius.
People are all suggesting in the chat room that I could start a hand puppet show now.
I know where your hands have been there.
There you go, see, look, I can do a mouth. Hello, Alex.
There you go. Have we got the third member of the team?
Part two. I had to go for a photo. I had a go at photographing the moon a while back with some extension tubes. However, I found I couldn't focus the lens I used would not focus far enough away. I tried a couple of lenses, a Sigma 70-30 and an old manual 50 prime. Neither worked. Is this a limitation of the lens or something to do with the crop sensor camera? My thought on that one, the word extension tubes is what scared me there, because if he's talking about an extender, so a 2x or a 1.4 times extender, he shouldn't be getting any issues. But if he's talking about sticking extension tubes on, extension tubes will move the focal length away from the sensor. So he's really going to struggle to pull back to that. They're for macro. They're not for distance.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, that's the wrong way around. That's how I was reading it. I was thinking, why would you put extension tubes on to shoot the moon?
Yeah, I mean, if he's shooting with extension tubes, they're for macrame. They're for pulling the focal point up further away so that you can get to stuff that's tiny. If you want to shoot the lens, if you want to shoot the moon and you put an extender on, that will be 1.4 or 2.0 extensions, then there's something else going on wrong. But it's not crop sensors. There's nothing to do with crop sensors there. You need to answer that question, Dave, by telling us exactly what you've got. But my thought is, if it's a macro tube, you should have done this. Then you're more likely to get a fly on the end of the lens than you are the moon.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd have to jump in a space rocket to use those tubes to photograph the moon. You'd probably have to be about 3 foot away from it.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be the most simple answer we've ever had to a question.
Yeah, not enough information, Dave. Right, again.
Or take the lens cap off. One of those sort of answers.
Sorry, Dave, if we've...
It's all right. Is this David, as in Bracey?
David Bracey, yeah.
Oh, okay, so we know him. He's a lovely young...
We'll see him Monday night. There we go. Yeah. Good lad. Thank you, Dave. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. They're fantastic, and even though there's drilling over the top of their advert, they're still going to be happy because they love us and we love them, and it's all wonderful and dandy. If you want anything for the web, co-location services, domain names, hosting, DNS management, they're the people you got to go to. Go and give them a crack out, see what they like. Go to our webpage first, go to the sponsors link off britishtechnetwork.com, and then they'll know we sent you. Do that sign into your account as well. That'd be really wonderful. Thank you very much. And then when you've gone to buy something, come back and there's a pile of offer codes on that page that'll get you a load of money off your stuff. And by supporting them, you're supporting us, because the amount of bandwidth that we use would absolutely kill us. I couldn't afford it each month. It's 400 quid's worth of bandwidth. So please support UK2. If you're going to buy that stuff anyway, go and check out their prices. If they're ridiculously expensive, don't buy it, but I think you're going to find they're not. So please, please, please check them out. Thanks very much for their support. We'd be lost without them. And also, vote for us in the European Podcast Awards. It is coming towards the end of the voting period. You've only got a couple of weeks left of voting and then it goes off. 400,000 votes were cast last year, and I want us to get about 200,000 this year alone. I don't want us to be last again. So please, please, please support us there. Go to britishtechnetwork.com and click on the logos, and they'll take you to the voting pages. And when you've voted, close your browser down, open up again, and go back and vote again. Everyone needs to vote 5 times a day for every show, please. And we might actually win something this year. That would be nice, rather than finishing third.
How many do they choose from in the end? Is it the top 6 they choose from?
I think it's top 10. Top 10 in votes. There's categories as well. So,
well, that's okay. So we should at least have 6 of the top 10.
We should. It'd be nice. Where can we get hold of you, Alex?
You can get me at Alex G. Fox on Twitter. And I have to put something right. I heard last night, and I'm sure we might hear it again, that we're back. Well, some of us never went away. We did manage to cobble together in the nicest possible way a couple of media shows over Christmas and the new year. So please, if you've got a spare moment or a little bit more than that, please listen to the media show, because we do have fun making it. And it would be nice if more people got involved. That's another option on this network. So if you missed anything and you've got some spare time, there's a couple of media shows that came out between Christmas and New Year that you might be just a little bit interested in listening to. So thank you.
That was Alex begging there.
Yeah, we're only a little bit begging.
There's loads of shows. Go and listen to them. Gamer, iOS, all of them. They're all great. We'll be back again next week. I'm Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. And you can get me for commercial photography work if you go to ographysquared.co.uk. See you again soon. Keep your questions coming in. Questions are to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. And we'll read them out just like David's. Make sure you write enough detail so we can answer them. See you soon. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.